transition surfing. Rashes.
Nerdism. Yes, welcome to Blitzed Pure Tour Nerdism. I'm joined by Ronnie Blakey, due to Vaughn's absence somewhere in the northwest Australian desert, last seen with his thumb out next to a red dirt road looking for a spare jerry can of petrol or water or something. But I hope he's all right. Is he all right, Ronnie?
Oh, mate, I think he's okay. Just mermaning behind whale sharks up in the north.
Oh, how nice. That sounds amazing. I hope he doesn't get sucked up with the krill and turned into a interstellar corn kernel. That'd be a nightmare.
Mate, Vorno is pretty much just a living, just human version of a remora anyway. Just, you know, sucking off the side of just the bigger picture, just sucking up the good times. Whatever's left behind, he's there, ready to swoop on it.
Oh, geez, that's a, yeah, wow, it's a powerful metaphor and a powerful image. mate, Margaret River, it's a wrap, and it was a pretty sick event, scored pretty high on the shat rating, S for skits, H for Hamad, A for, are you kidding me, and T for torture. I gave it a 3.5 out of 5, plenty of drama, some really blue-chip, world-class main break conditions to wrap up finals day, and just one of the great bludgeon fests, one of the great toe-to-toe juke amounts between the two male surfers who you really want to go see head-to-head out here. An amazing performance in the women's by Sawyer Lindblad, surfing all the way to the finals to stay alive on tour. And Gabriella Bryan keeping the Kauaians run going, taking out the women's. But, yeah, what'd you go with on the shat rating, Ron?
Whew, I had a bit of everything too, didn't it? So it did sort of tick every box in the shat meter. But yeah, look, for me, I'm with you. Like, I'd probably say, just based on, you know, what a fantastic finals day it was, that it kind of came up to a 4 for me. Margs has been just such a, you know, pretty surprising to see where Margs sits for me in all the events on the schedule. There was a moment in time where, you know, you had Fanning kind of shit canning the wave and Medina wasn't into it. Kelly never had great success there, so never really sang its praises. But something clicked, you know, when John just absolutely blew the place apart with the best big wave, high-performance surfing anyone's ever seen. Ever since then, it's consistently kind of delivered big conditions, but the kind of waves that people can still truly rip into. And even when it comes to airs, you know, people are willing to do something different out there. So it's kind of like become a favourite stop for me, just because it does always kind of deliver swell. So this year was like a funny one. It was the first time really there's been no swell, like sort of scary swell to speak of. But thankfully, finals day was just primo conditions, like from the very first heat right through to the final hooter. It just was pumping, just groomed and so attackable. And the crew just went mad.
Yeah, it is such a good point. It does seem to always deliver quality waves. It's not obviously in the consequential category most of the time. And I can see why. You know, it was out of favour during the Dream Tour years. It wasn't a CT venue. But, yeah, like you said, it is such a consistent playing field. Everyone's got the same opportunity. You know, it's generally not a wave-catching competition. You know, most people seem to get some good opportunity on waves with plenty of scoring potential. And that said, it does come down to who reads the lineup best, and no one reads it better than the Vortex Shaman, who was just sublime in his understanding of that lineup. We'll get to that in a sec, because it was really all about the cut for the whole first half of the event, Ron. And I mean, do you even have any tears left, or were you just crying ghost loads by the end of it? Because just little wisps of smoke coming out the eyeballs. How emotional right. was it?
I've been spitting ghost tears for ages. But yeah, it is emotional. You can feel the ramp up again at Bells, but it's just not there. It's sort of like getting upset about your team losing in the semi-finals. It's like, yeah, it's upsetting. This is in context to the Bells event. It's upsetting, but you kind of get the feeling that the true emotion is going to be on GF day. That's when losers are really going to feel the pinch, and winners are going to feel the ecstasy of staying alive on the championship tour. So, for me, the emotion definitely ramped up once we got over to Western Australia, and you can sense it too for those people that are just hanging back and had a shit start to the year and they're below the cut line. You can feel the fear. But in saying that, it felt more so like the surfers kind of in the mid-pack above the cut line, and also those at the back of the cut line were the ones that kind of withered under the pressure of it all. And it was actually like, you know, a spirited push from a small group of surfers on the men's and women's side that became the story of the event, just like showing so much ticker to step up in, you know, the most high-pressure situation to really do some of their best surfing and or get back on track.
Yeah, absolutely. And that spirited resurgence, it really seemed to come out of the Hawaiian quarter, at least on the men's side of the draw. Seth Moniz and Imai DeVault coming up with big results to secure their place on tour in 2024. And the flip side of that was the Brazilians kind of withered at this stop. Watching the Pupo on Pupo heat, the semi-verse Miguel, I think it was round of 16 heat, felt like I was watching some twisted Japanese game show. The brothers just being forced to surf off against each other to make the cut, and Semi got the nod over Miguel, but then got absolutely pumped by John in the next round, sending them both packing back to the Changers. We saw how emotional Semi was after the heat. It was actually a little bit awful. Like, I mean, obviously, no one's in control. I'm not blaming anyone, but fuck, it was hard to watch, man. Like, I've watched those two guys grow up together. I remember going to Stratty with Miguel and Semi when Semi was 11 years old, and, you know, just watching him try to keep pace with his brother and how much he loves his brother. Like, his brother is God to him. To see him knock his own brother back to the Changers, whoa, mate, it was a raw, raw moment in professional surfing that, yeah, I don't know if there's any kind of parallel to it.
Yeah, it's bizarre, isn't it? Because, like, you know, Vaughn and I are 2.5 years apart, and then you've got the Irons brothers, they were similar. Then you had the Hobgoods, obviously born just moments apart. And I think just because of the closeness, you know, inevitably there becomes like a rivalry, like, you know, and as coming from that perspective, you just sort of expect that you're going to see fireworks. For me, you just expect that you spend your childhoods just bashing at each other and, you know, throwing rocks at each other and trying to push each other's fucking heads through the drywall of your bedroom and just basically just bashing each other up. That was the case of Vono and I. And then, interestingly enough, you know, I think we're building the hype around this brother's battle, but those guys don't have a sibling rivalry. There's 9 years between Miggy and Sammy. And I saw Miguel just before the heat, and I said to him, I said, "How you feeling, mate? Like, you guys are obviously, you know, you're traveling together, you're staying together, you know, of course you both want to stay on tour, but, like, how's the vibe been?" And he's like, "Oh, we have no rivalry at all. Like, it's a really hard one to get up for. Like, we're just convincing each other to go out there and surf our best. And the result will go the way it goes." But with 9 years between them and Miguel being on the road before Sammy and leading him around the world and coaching him onto the championship tour, like, Sammy lists Miguel on his, like, bio sheet as his coach. So really interesting situation, that one. Definitely felt the pain. Big brother took like a had a brave face. He just smiled his way through it. He was like, hey, I'm ready for the challenger. And Sammy just came in. I think it was just dawning on him. You know, he doesn't know tour life without his brother there. He doesn't know what it's like to prep for heats without his big brother there. It's way more of a paternal relationship. And, yeah, so the emotion, like, far out. When he came up, he was just inconsolable. And that was hard to watch. But, you know, it's pretty clear to me that Sammy, you know, is warming to his position at the top level. I mean, like you said, he did get blitzed in the next round. I think just all the build-up kind of had you feeling like even though he won that heat, he may have shored up his position. So it was sort of like even a shock that he wasn't guaranteed a place even after knocking his brother on tour. That was the ultimate insult. Mm. So you knock your bro off tour and now you're not even going to make it. The good thing for both of them is they'll be on the challenges together. But that was a brutal heat.
Yeah, it seems a bit morbid to say that, but it's true. They'll have each other on the changers. And, I mean, you saw Miguel smiling after the heat. Sammy was inconsolable, and Miguel was probably just thinking, yeah, mate, you're about to get absolutely fucking whipped, so I'll see you soon anyway, brother. Don't sweat it, mate.
Fully. Yeah. Go ahead, John play big brother.
Yeah. Oh, man. He was big brother. He was father. He was God to Sammy in that next heat. But
he was stepdad. Angry stepdad is what he was.
He was angry stepdad. Sally Fitz had it all to do as well in this event and looked for a moment like she was going to get it done. She had to final at Margs to keep a spot on tour, got all the way to the quarters, beating the reigning world champ Caroline Margs on the way, only to face another surfer in her exact same position, Soy Lindblad, who also needed to make the final and, you know, is somewhat of a clone of Caroline Margs, or so it seems at times. And, that heat came down to the very last wave. Sally managed to find a bomb in the dying stages, but kind of nursed it and went a bit lateral instead of vert, and the judges just hammered her for it. Five, six, seven for a wave that had plenty of scoring potential in it. You called it. Far out. That last section in particular, it looks like there was an opportunity to get up and over the lip line for a re-entry, which likely would have given her the score. I'd imagine she'll be playing bed karate for years to come, Ron.
Oh, mate, it was brutal. But, yeah, Sal on both her scoring rides kind of cut short of the final section to ensure that she finished on her feet. And it's basically she, you know, she slung the barrel on her own little game of Russian roulette there. Like, it was pretty full on. It was definitely, she had so much commitment to the bigger sections in her earlier heats that got her excellent scores. And then she just safetied her way to her numbers, and I think she got punished for it. When I reflect on that heat, like, honestly, it could have gone either way, but the judges, they want to see you, it was pretty consistent. They want to see you open up strong, and then they want to see you commit to the end section. And on both those rides, Sal didn't, and it's cost her a place. Real shame, and obviously there's a lot of nerves once you know, I feel like through the earlier rounds there was a lot of surfers, like even India Robinson, who just showed so much gumption and just attacked the wave. And then when it's sort of like the reality of potentially winning your way through to the final and then staying on tour becomes kind of a bit clearer. Suddenly it's within reach and you're trying to like slow down your emotions, try and be the composed competitor, but it's actually the wrong game plan. It's like Sawyer never shifted from attacking the end section. So she ended up getting rewarded really well, and that's what ultimately got her to the final and got her a place on the tour.
Have you heard how Sal's taken the loss? You know, obviously she's been such a stoic campaigner for Australian surfing over so many years. She never got that world title either. She come up just short there, and she's come up just short here again. Yeah, how's she taking it?
Sal used to take her losses really bad, and she took them bad because she wasn't used to winning. Wasn't used to losing, excuse me. Yeah, she just never lost a lot when she was a grom, and especially coming through the QS, and youngest surfer for a long period of time, or the fastest qualifier, just got it done in like three events when she qualified for the championship tour, and then she joined the tour ranks. Took her a while to start winning, but she was always super consistent. Like, she had some amazing stat of making the quarterfinals like almost 45 times in a row.
Wow.
So it was just like she was always incredibly consistent, you know, and I think like with that, you know, you just have this expectation that you're going to motor through those earlier rounds. It's probably something that over the past couple of years she's gotten a little bit more comfortable with. She's been bumped off tour a couple of times. She made the Olympics. She didn't medal, and that was like a massive dream. She was super devastated about that. So she's had this like learning period of getting comfortable with losses. And even though she was devastated, I think Sal kind of goes, you know what, I can do the challenges, I can get back. But, you know, that's not a guarantee with the talent coming through on the women's side. So it's, you know, you definitely kind of start asking yourself the question, you know, is this the last time we've seen Sally serving in a CT? Yeah, it's going to be interesting for sure.
Yeah, it seems like the mindset aspect really has let her down so far on tour in 2024. You know, couldn't come up with any consistency in the earlier events. And then at this event, finally, under the pressure, she was able to really lock in, surf aggressively. But then right at the pointy end, yeah, just lost composure and went against all salient advice when surfing at this level, which is you've got to go vertical. If you go lateral, they just don't give you over a five, or they don't. You don't break into that 6 point range with lateral surfing at this level, it seems.
Mate, it's brutal. I think, you know, Sal is definitely, I mentioned those results, those stats. Like, she is definitely one of the most consistent surfers ever. But, you know, what kind of stopped her winning through to get world titles is that all the world champs in her era when she was runner-up a few times on the trot, like, they just had bigger turns than her. And it's sort of been something that Sal has gone away and worked on. She's still that super consistent surfer. Like, you don't really see Sal have bad surfs. But when it comes down to it, you know, the criteria is just asking more of these competitors all the time. And if you don't do those big turns, if you don't put it on the line, you'll only ever manage sixes. And even the rookies on the tour these days are dropping excellent rides because they just have that do or die attitude. Mm. And I just think it's a mindset that Sal has never really gotten comfortable with, just being in full blown attack mode.
Do or die is definitely the formula. Another surfer struggling to break out of that 6 point range. The GOAT couldn't get it done at Margs. He's gone. Cut. Still knocked Iago Dora out of the event though on the way out. So let's not forget that, because Iago ain't no chump. And
Iago almost fell off tour too.
Totally,
he was a heat away from losing his place.
What was the feeling at the event site, given the GOAT's departure from the world tour? Unbelievable to even say those words out there.
Oh, no. Fuck, I don't think the GOAT even realised it until halfway through his post-scene interview after losing to Griffin. Really weird. And also there's never a feeling of finality with Kelly. Like, you just go, well, it almost felt weird to start talking about him like he was wrapping it up because, yeah, well, fuck, we're going to see him again.
Yeah, almost like, guarantee he'll be at the next event.
It's not official, but, you know, Tahiti is sponsored by Outer Known.
Yeah, fully.
Like, who else are they going to put in? Like, I love Hedgie, but, like, if Kelly wants that spot, it's his. and then Fiji, it's sort of like it'd just be disrespectful if they didn't whack him in. I mean, he deserves like a few wild cards, and I think he'll get them. Like, you can't go to Pipe next year without Kelly getting the call up. He only won it in 2022. Like, you have to give him this victory lap. I know he's been getting that for a while, but if it's official, if it's done, if he's not a full-time campaigner, at the venues that he really loves, I just think whack him in. Everyone wants to see it. You're just doing the surfing world a disservice if you don't put him in.
Mm, well said. Agreed.
But yeah, it was fucking weird and awesome at the same time. Like, he was just I think he truly believed he was going to get it done. And that's just, you know, that's just the champion mindset. But once it was kind of done, like the post show the day that he got bumped was awesome. Joey, I think, had interviewed him earlier in the year and sort of had all his questions sort of in his head already. But it was just really cool. Kelly was just typically, like, just captivating and engaging and answered his questions beautifully. And fuck, you can tell, like, how much it means to him. That was the cool thing. I was just like, as soon as he just started, like, breaking up and just going, oh, you know, it hasn't all been roses, but it's been the best time of my life, I was just going, fuck, it's it. It is it. It actually is it. It's finally it. It was so bizarre. But, yeah, it was also nice to be able to reflect on it and just go, fuck, look at this guy's contribution to it all. And, inside the jersey and out of it, I think that's what makes him the GOAT, because he's just blowing our minds at every turn, you know, whether it was Taylor's movies or his performances in just Heaving Waves when he stepped away from the tour. He just was fucking just a non-stop highlight reel. And I feel like we're all going to marvel at what he does next. I think, well, don't you reckon we're going to see his best surf?
Well, absolutely. I mean, he's up against the most unbeatable opponent in his career, which is Father Time, but fuck, he's swinging hard and he's paddling him way up the point, that's for sure.
Fuck, he's way from Kira, though, before the Aussie leg even kicked off. I was just going, how many people can fucking lay down a carve like that on the tour? Like, there's just not many. So, like, yeah, I think Kelly's been bashed up a bit by the next generation for a while, but I also think the new schedule kind of bashed him up a lot, and it's bashed up a lot of good surfers, and we've lost a lot of good surfers because of it. It was weird earlier on talking about WA and the fact that it's such a consistent wave, and, you know, it used to kind of be looked down on by some of the competitors on tour. It's like, it's elevation to consistent performance wave. Maybe has a lot to do with just the schedule itself at the moment. It's not blowing minds. You couldn't call it a dream tour. So, you know, Margie's feels this different place. It feels a different void. And I think it will continue to do that now because it's established as that venue, the big wave high performance spot. But, yeah, I think it'll be sick to see Kelly just free surfing.
Absolutely, mate. And just moving on to a few of the standouts from this event. Ooh-ah, George Pitar, carrying on from Bells. A star's been born, it would seem. The nine Fuck against Liam O'Brien was some properly new-school, futuristic, almost Ewing-spec rail surfing. That wave in particular started with a huge rip out of the top. He got a crazy angle and release, but it was all about the second turn on that wave. He kind of ripped the smoothest arc and then drifts the tail. Like, I haven't seen that subtle little drifting transition before. He kind of weightless, very unique line, all his own. He blew the last turn and still got a nine. I think the springs would have exploded out of the judging calculator if he completed that last hammer. What an announcement. What a way to announce himself on the world stage. Obviously going on to knock Griffin in the next heat, mostly on the back of a pretty sick pit for a 9.5. He ended up with two of the highest scoring rides of the contest. Just his rail surfing, the arcs were so high and radical and smooth, and just the strength and flexibility through the hips and core zone is insane.
Yeah, GP is he's just one of those guys that just came on from kind of nowhere. He had that spark and flair when he sort of clutch surfed his way to the final there at Surfers last year to make the Challenger Series. You could see that he was, you know, above average, and he's just continued to evolve. He did pretty well in the challenges. But, yeah, he just honestly, like, you chat to the bloke, like a few of the girls around the event site are just absolutely loving him too. He looks like he could be singing dressed in a suit, just crooning next to the piano in the downstairs bar at the Novotel in Manly.
Except for that waterlogged bogan core accent he's got, which I love, by the way. He's just zonked by sun and risk offshores.
Yeah, he's frothing. But he was great, man. He's sharp. He's just one of those like Aussie groms that just he doesn't give a fuck who he's surfing against. That's what you love, people like that who just don't buckle under the pressure of coming up against a hyped opponent. He just kept going. But yeah, clean rails, really sharp, and it's main break. It wasn't huge this year, but on that final day, there's enough push and power out there to where you're trying to impose yourself on a wave that's sort of at times pushing back, and you just did beautifully. You just laid into it. It was great. Mm-hmm. So yeah, GP should rip through them on the challenges this year, and I know there's quite a few rights as well on the challenges, so should be able to get it done, I think.
Yeah, can't wait to see his development. And elsewhere, yeah, the Hawaiians, as I mentioned at the top of the program, they rallied like you'd expect them to do it this wave. You know, they really enjoy waves with push and a big canvas to rip apart. Seth Moniz, mate, what a performance. One of the most clutch performances I can remember. Couldn't believe what he produced to beat Ethan Ewing. Required a score in the excellent range with time counting down, and produced an 8.17 for the win. Found a bomb set, big slice to snap, and an end section floater. Pretty meat and potato surfing, I thought, but the judges loved the size and quality of the wave and the commitment on the end section. Coughing up eights in the dying stages to get a win over Ethan to keep your tour dream alive when he hasn't really threatened all season. How did he do it?
Mate, that was gnarly. Yeah, Seth's surfing has been, like, you know, he would say it too. Like, it's been on the nose. It's been reeking. He hasn't actually been surfing that well for a long time. He had that incredible final with Kelly, one of the most gutsy performances to crack the pipe final a couple of years back. But since then, his years have been, like, low on highlights, you know, like, really can't even think of a memorable performance. Can't even think of a wave that he rode in the past couple of seasons. And meanwhile, his two teammates, even though Griff's gone to Quicksilver now, but he's like childhood friends, Ethan Ewing and Griffin, are just on fire. They're winning events. They're fucking touted as the best surfers in the world at the moment. They're just like, they're in this whole nother level, you know, and he's at the back end of the ratings. It's got to kind of take its toll on you emotionally. And like I said, though, it was more the surfing was gone. He just wasn't surfing well at all. And I don't know. I think you can put it down to his new freaking guru, Doug Silver. Just an absolute maniac. Had a lot of chats with Doug over there. Just easily the most entertaining person in the comp. Just dressed high-end fashion, big dog chain around the neck, listening to Dorf down on the beach, just waiting in the keyhole shallows, like why Seth was surfing his heat, just tapping into something different, giving him different like mantras, like before he went out.
Modelo! Modelo!
That was just one. They had a few. They had Surf earlier on in the event, which stood for something else.
New school cattle dog. Modelo! He's fucking head off.
Oh, for sure, yeah. So that was it. I just think he got Seth out of his own head, and he was just like, man, they were like doing sessions where they were just sitting in the lineup. They weren't catching waves. And he was going, man, just feel it. Just like, he's off chops, Doug. But
unbelievable.
He's, I don't know, man. Just for someone, Seth had said to me just after the final, I went and congratulated him. And he said that he slept for like 2 hours the night before, and he was just wigging out. And he had a message in the morning from Griffin that just said, hey, brother, like, you've got this. I'm going to come down. I'll be there to watch your heats and just, you know, get it done. And I think Doug as well, sort of a combination of a few things that sort of gave him the belief that he could do it. And once he banked an excellent score, just something dropped. Then he was like twice the surfer he's been for the last 2 years. But Seth's like, you know, obviously not probably naturally as gifted as Griff and Nathan. And he had to grind his way to that result. But you just never know, like, what that confidence could do for him. Could be an epic finish to the year. But he'll go into Tahiti now, like, going, okay, I've got it back. And he's such an animal in heaving pits.
Oh, I'd expect
him to get on a bit of a roll from here.
That's such a good point. You think about highlights, and all's I really think about is just his raw hucking it over the ledge approach Newton pits, Pacific pits of consequence.
Someone said this to me just before, like, after Bells, he got a 33rd, and you just didn't see him, like, losing out. He had, a bad run. Again, like, some of these people that are just, like, the world's best surfers in quality waves, like, with that run of sort of shit waves through Portugal, also Bells was a really average year, and then the opening rounds in WA, it just wore those people down. You know, the people that just to truly show their best and their quality surf. But, you know, you got to survive those shit days too, and the best guys too. But someone had said to me not long ago, I just suspect that, I said, I think Seth might be the worst surfer on tour at the moment. And I was like, whoa, that's a heavy observation. But I couldn't disagree with it just based on how he'd been surfing, whether you talk in a jersey or in a free surf. But that completely changed in West Oz, and I'm so glad it did, because he is amazing. Like, he's incredible, and he's got that. Like, I just love watching him big surf.
Get him in the juice, and he's amazing. But, yeah, on rail, kind of reminiscent of Jeremy Flores at times. No disrespect to Jeremy, but that's obviously a different generation of professional surfing.
Fully. Jeremy found it, though, eh? Like, Jeremy found it at the end. Like, he was gnarly. Like, that final that he had with Kanoa, like, at Karamas. Yep. Like, you just go, fuck, this is actually, like, Jeremy's one of the best rail surfers on tour now. I think Seth, with a bit of confidence, might be able to do that. But then there's the other Hawaiians, like Emi. I just expected Emi would make it. Like, he's just surfing too good not to. It's just like it does become a thing, like, when you get to the cart where you're looking at what people's results are, and you're like, oh, this is a heat win, has Emi sitting back here. Oh, this is a heat win that has him sitting in danger of flying off tour. If he can just make a heat, he'll improve, like, on his trailway result, and he'll be sweet. That's the only reason he's, like, where he is on the rankings. And I was just looking at him, I just can't, mate. He's by far, like, you know, like, top 16 is an old school way of looking at it, but he's a top 16 surfer, like, in my opinion. I mean, there's plenty of them that are, but, yeah, he was solid.
Technically and stylistically flawless. There's kind of comparisons with John at times, but, yeah, just struggling to put it all together at this level. It's so hard. And, you know, the guy he knocked off too, Ian Gentile, another guy from Maui, you know, kind of parallels with the Pupo heat there. But, you know, I keep wanting to call him Genitals.
Genitals. He's probably lying, mate. Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah, he had a really consistent start to the year, and it just goes to show at this level that you just can't take your foot off the gas at any point. Act so quick. It's remarkable.
Yeah. It's five events, one trailway, so it's four. It's four events, really. It's just, there's nothing in it. It's like the totals, once you take those trailway results out, are just so incredibly close, except for those really consistent guys at the top. But, yeah, Emi was amazing. He just looked solid.
But, obviously, when we're talking Hawaiians, all the talk is about John Florence. That's basically what this event will be remembered for. The tracks he was laying down. You're in the booth for the perfect 10. Just an explosion of limbs and fins into the lip, reeled in seamlessly straight into a vertical Rio and an N-section John carve. He's got his own signature turn now. It's the John carve and the John hack. There's just no one in the world that comes close to his brand of surfing on a pure performance level at that wave, although he didn't get the victory.
Yeah, I know. It's sort of I don't know. There's obviously something going on there competitively with John, because the benchmark surfing belongs to him. It's like he sets the pace. Like, as well as Ethan surfing, as well as his contemporaries at the top end of the rankings are surfing, no one touched the three turns that John did in that heat. No one got even close. And sometimes that happens where you see like the miracle wave, but it wasn't the wave, it was the surfer. As far as the scores go, you know, like that, the 8.5, the frontside car that he did, like, only he can do that.
Oh man.
Like, as unbelievable and powerful as Ethan surfing is, and as on rail, like, he doesn't do it like that. He does his own version of that turn, which is still like worthy of an excellent number. But John's the best surfer in the world, and luckily, sometimes he gets to do his thing in a jersey as well. You know, there's just no way to deny it. Like, and then the 10-point ride is like, it's for me, I like the carve better. The 10-point ride was more like how many other surfers in the event through that kind of term on the first section at main break this year. It's like you couldn't deny it. Mm. It was worthy of the score, but yeah, he's on another level for sure. I think everyone knows that. Some amazing competitors, like, you know, just squabbling over like who won this heat and who won that heat, and it's like whatever. Mm. Like, fuck, the only thing I remember turn wise from that event, the three turns that John did.
That arc out of the top is so seared into my mind. Like, it's just on a continuous loop in there. There's some weird synchronicity between his skill set and the boards he's on too that adds an extra bit of spice to it all. But just the way he kind of tic-tacs around the section and then just buries the deepest bottom turn and starts that turn so early and high and tight at that impossible angle, carves through that vertical pocket and swerves out of it. The swerve out of it through that kind of compressed back leg and his hips, it's a thing of absolute majesty and beauty, and it's in a league of its own.
Yeah, it's so good.
So good, mate. And
it's so good to watch.
So good to watch. So motivating and inspiring. And it was interesting actually hearing on Ain't That Swell, Vaughan's interview with Robbo, after winning, just saying that John calling himself the King of Margs. I don't know if John was calling himself the King of Margs. I think maybe other people were, but that really fired Jack up, and the 10, he said, really stoked the fire within him. So just watching John catch fire like that got the best out of Jack. It seemed like after the 10 and after the semis that it was a foregone conclusion that no one could come close to John when he's in that kind of form. But it's interesting, like, on a pure performance level, John was the standout in the event, but Jack Robinson was definitely the best all-round surfer of the event, because his ability to pick the eyes out of the conditions is just, it's peerless. It's peerless almost anywhere on tour, but when he's at home, his relationship with the ocean enters a sublime, even spiritual realm. He talked about, you know, just soaking up all the energy from all the frothing groms that were coursing down there to cheer him on. And, you know, he repeatedly said, I'm born for this, I'm born for these moments. He relishes those moments. And it was the final we all wanted. And, man, it did not disappoint. It was an incredible heat. The two waves in 2 minutes by Jack, the 9-1 for that huge open face carve on the biggest wave of the heat into a pretty awkward but consequential end section floater, and then turning around and paddling straight into that wave under John's priority, the big straight air and the big frontside grab out of the bowl, and the buttery landing. And then a closeout hit for an 8.17 and a combined total of 17.27 in two waves in 2 minutes. I think it was the second or first highest combined total of the event. I mean, talk us through it. The aerial was an interesting one too, because, you know, he basically won the last final or yeah, the last final he was in at this wave in 2022 against John with that same brand of surfing. I think it was the only punt we saw on finals day. It's one of the only ones I can remember in the whole event, and the judges just ate it up.
Oh, yeah. It was a sick air, too. I mean, kind of like you, from the front on angle, you lost it a bit in the wind and spray off the wave. But from the water angle, you got to see how, you know, how high it was, just how controlled he was, just that he lost nothing in the landing. There was no recovery time. But, yeah, he wasn't actually blitzing the field like John on his road through to the final. On finals day, you know, he was surfing okay. He was just picking apart the lineup. Like his feel for the ocean, and especially the waves that count, in the big stuff, he just zeroes in. He just has a feel for the energy. You know, he has an impulse that I just don't think a lot of surfers have. He's just so tapped into it. And yeah, like you said, he's tapping into anything, everything. He's tapping into the energy on the beach. He's tapping into, you know, the moment of taking his son Zen back to WA with his wife Julia for the first time. Like, there were so many things that he was just taking in and feeding off. And the other thing is, he's a fucking unbelievable competitor. You know, like, I know he's had a couple of runner-up finishes, but generally when he gets to a final, I just think his confidence unsettles his rivals. You know, I think that the focus, I think there's a lot of other surfers on the tour that with that same focus would be challenging for world titles and winning events themselves. It's crazy to think now that he's, you know, like overtaken, I'm pretty sure that he's maybe overtaken Geordie Smith now for wins, and he only got on tour like 2021. So wow. It's kind of ridiculous how quickly he's racking them up. But yeah, I definitely felt like John was going to be unbeatable based on how Jack was surfing him through to that final. But I had a chat to Meg Demrose just after the final, and he was just saying, "Hey, they've seen John's carve. You haven't even done your best carve yet." And he was like, "No." He goes, "I'm going to show him. I'm going to show him my best carve in the final." And then he was saying, "I'm going to show them something different. I'm going to show them there on that first section." So he obviously feels really comfortable at a location that, you know, yes, John's got it completely dialed, but just the read to get that air so well placed in the final, it just unsettled John. You could tell, like even at the end when he needed a, you know, an 8.5 or whatever, and he just took a weird insider. Like just to not be sharp enough to know that you couldn't convert on that wave competitively, like it's a bad decision and like a sign that the wheels had fallen off mentally. He's just a fucking – he's an animal. Like I know he said it to Vaughn one time, like, but he doesn't really kind of get – he's not in awe of his competitors, his rivals, in the finals, and he's not. He doesn't buy into it. He's just completely zeroed in on himself and what he has to do. But yeah, I thought it was pretty amazing that he did his best two turns of the entire event in the final. And when you look at his performances in CT events, quite often he has the best waves of the event in the final. And some people rely on momentum to make that happen. Like Felipe, once he gathers some momentum, he can do that in a final after he's built through a couple of heats. And John as well, like momentum, like when he gets the lead going his way and he's had a couple of excellent scores, he can build on it and really get going. But Jack just came from kind of nowhere. Like he had the momentum to get to the final, obviously, but when you look at his numbers, they're not mind-blowing. And then he goes out in the final and does his very best surfing at that moment. He's a unicorn.
He is a unicorn, and it's his passion for those moments. He lives for the high-pressure situation. He loves putting on a show. He loves proving people wrong. He loves having his back against the wall. Like, that is where, that is his happy place, and that is not a lot of people's happy place. But at this level, you need to make it your happy place, because it's a situation that comes up time and time again if you want to survive and thrive at this level.
He's got a young kid, right? So he's not going to go out and rage, but he doesn't do that anyway. Jack didn't celebrate. He had a get-together and a feed, no drinking. And then he is already talking about Tahiti.
Mm.
So, like, there's just not even a moment where he's looking at anything other than the end goal. Like, he's just completely zeroed in on it.
He's so present and in the moment, isn't he? Like, yeah. For him, the cherry on top, it's not winning the event and getting the trophy and the check and the ratings points, it's being in the final and doing a big frontside grab when no one's expecting it and ripping that crazy open face carve. Fuck, he wrenched that thing so hard in at the end there, he almost got tubed. That's the cherry. That's what he lives for. It's the moment itself, which is how it needs to be for greatness. You can't really be motivated by the shiny trinkets and trophies and whatnots, can you?
Nah. He's awesome. You think about him in that sort of the Olympic conversation as well. Like,
fully,
mate. It's not just the waves. You know, it used to be we used to talk about the waves with Jack. He'd say, "Oh man, if sunset's pumping, he's got a really good chance at winning. If Pipe's pumping, he's got a good chance of winning." Well, when Pipe was fucked, he won. And he's also won there when it's huge. And, like, he can do it everywhere. Like, G-Land. Like, you would never have picked him to take out G-Land. Like, it was 3 foot. You just wouldn't have imagined that, you know, without the big orbs throbbing pits, that he would be able to get done. But he actually constantly proves people wrong. It's pretty cool to have someone like that now challenging for event wins and for a world title.
Mate, just quickly, before I let you go, the John versus Medina heat and just Medina surfing in this event, I don't really ever disagree with the judging, but, you know, it's five people all with different opinions and different scores. I generally think they come up with the right result. But, man, that first wave, his 7-8-3, I don't know if it was his first wave, maybe it was his second, but it was as good a backside comp wave as you can surf pretty well. Four of the most well-timed vert snaps, slightly different angle and approach on each turn, but, you know, the result was the same, a perfect turn. John got the nod by 0.3, could have crueled his run right there and then. Medina's desperately trying to surf himself into some form, you know, basically had to get a result here to avoid the cut. But, where's Medina at? And what was the feeling at the contest site? We know Medina's been very outspoken against the judging. Was he spitting chips behind the scenes? What was your take on that?
Fuck, you know what? Well, there wasn't a lot of talk with the losers this year. I just think, like, they've learnt their lesson with just getting in the face of competitors when they're trying to process such a massive fucking pin in their career balloon. So there wasn't a lot of that, which I kind of think is a bummer, because sometimes people do have some stuff that they want to say. If someone loses and you put a camera in their face and it's a close seat, usually they'll say, you know, that they thought they won. That's just inevitable. And that's what happened at Bells. It's like there's so much emotion attached to it. You've just lost the heat where it's not even about what you've seen. Like the heat that he lost with Cole Hausman down at Bells, he didn't even see it. So his reaction is based off he let a wave go under priority. Like he had priority, let a wave go. Cole took off on that wave. The first turn Cole did down there was a full fucking just gurney spray straight in Medina's face. And then he's like looking out at sea. So he didn't actually see that wave that Cole surfed. It's just an assumption that he has done enough to win. And then he goes to the beach and I think he has Charlie Medina and maybe Kingy telling him that he won for sure. I've spoken to a few people about that heat that watched. Everyone forms their opinions at home. Like, it's a really interesting thing. I think it gets to a point where you're sort of saying, well, do the judges just need to judge from the screen? Because they see it differently to what the cameras see.
Oh, and that's yes, such a good point. Yeah.
They have replays, but like to keep the masses happy, should they just score off the screen? Like you could just set them up. Like we call generally, like we're calling events from screen. There is certain venues like WA, you can look over your shoulder, but it's the backdrop is the break for the TV set.
Mm-hmm.
But the judges like have a different perspective. Winky's always a tricky one with really like interesting close heats that people can't get their head around based on the vision. I heard BL on his podcast talking about it, and he's really wise to it because he's called so many events and seen so much. He goes, look, from the camera angles, you know, he said, from the camera angles, I thought Medina's backside air was the best turn in that heat and probably should have been best score. And it ended up becoming a conversation about progression and not rewarding the progression. And I just went, you know what? I watched that heat on camera and then later on saw a front-on view that someone had shot of Medina's air. And from front-on, it looked just okay. Mm. From the water, it looked fucking incredible. Like, it looked unbelievable. So, like, when you're at home watching, you see Medina's backside air, the way didn't even go into his top two. You're like, how did that not score? But it just didn't tick the boxes for the criteria for a backside air. Like, he didn't complete the rotation in the air. Yes, there was tail height, but it wasn't a super high air. He kind of had some recovery time where he was, like, you know, almost using the phone to get back out in front of the wave. So it was just... What you see on camera sometimes doesn't look the same as it did in the live moment.
Yeah. And I think in this heat against John at Margs, I think it's difficult for the judges to get the scale right, particularly in the early stages of a heat against someone as radical as John. And I think they just lowballed Medina with the 7-8-3. And, you know, I think that the rest of the scores were correct, but I don't think they got the right winner in that heat. I think Medina wins that heat. I think the 7-8-3 has to go a bit higher into the excellent range, given how much flow and how much variety and how many critical turns there was. John's 6.9 on the buzzer, which ultimately won him the heat and was the score that he needed. It was a disjointed wave, no flow, but there was a radical John hack in there. So the scale is a hard thing to set. It's an unenviable task, you know, especially I think that might have been the first heat of the day, or it seemed like an early heat that they're getting a read on conditions, how big it is, what's possible. You're up against a guy like John. You know, you saw Dane Reynolds kind of suffer from this at different points in his career where he seemed to be getting judged against his own abilities. He had his own kind of individual scale. It's a hard one.
I'm not trying to avoid the question. I was just sort of sitting up the same fuck. It's a dangerous game to cast opinions based on the footage when the judge's perspective is different.
It's a good point.
But there was interesting. Like someone, I actually saw Kelly watching the heat back. He hadn't watched it live and he watched the footage. And he was like, I think, felt that Medina probably got the victory. But what else did he say? He said that same thing about the vision, and you can agree with it. But he also said that when John claims a wave like that, like because you just don't see him claim like that, you do get the feeling that maybe he's settling it because it's a mid-range score. He's done nothing truly amazing on it. I think in the context of like wanting to stay alive in the event, you could forgive him for celebrating so hard. But if John's claiming that wave, does he truly believe that he's got the number, or is it a bit of mayo getting squirted on top of the whole situation? And I kind of thought that was interesting. I was like, well, I said it when that heat was happening. I was like, you just don't see John claiming like that. He doesn't claim marginal scores. He generally does no claims. You know, stands there with his mouth open after he's fucking done the turn of the century. So that was interesting to me. But, yeah, like the WSL, you know, like they're going to be so scrutinised with Medina's heat. He's actually just brought them under such scrutiny that everyone's just waiting to see what happens. And unfortunately for the WSL, it was a fucking close heat. And again, they've just, I just think they're just going, oh, God, here we go. Like, God, can't Gabby just fucking win it by a million miles? Can't he just do us that favour, or at least lose by a million miles? But there he is, like, you know, less than half a point separating the two guys at the end. And yeah, look, it's such a fucking, it's such a tough one too, you know. Like, I again, you're not judging, the panel's not judging the surfing through binoculars. Oh, they don't have a telescope on these guys, and each of them are looking at it and breaking it down. So, like, Marks is an important place to really dig in on your turns. Speed is obviously very recognisable from a distance. John rips through his first turn. He moves a hell of a lot of water, maybe even more than Medina. It's hard to say. Like, and there is kind of, like, details that sometimes there may be, you know, missing, like, even like in between turns. But it's, you know, again, I don't want to say that they're missing them, because the judges are pretty clued in and definitely know what they're looking for. But I just think it's a super close heat.
0.3 in it, 0.3 separating the two. So
yeah, I thought Medina was going to get the jump, but at the end of the day, like, I don't. Like, it was so close that I kind of went, well, it just depends. Depends on what you're looking for. Like, you know, and as much as the criteria is something that the surfers try and hold the judges accountable to, it's like there's so many different ways you can come at that criteria that even when it's sent out to each of the surfers every day, that you can't actually hold them to any of it, which is all part of the game.
Absolutely, mate. And just finally, Gabrielle O'Brien taking it out for the women, keeping Kauai's run going at this event and Hawaii's run going at this event. But, mate, got her first major score surfing with dolphins. Unbelievable. I don't know if we've seen that in a heat. I mean, we've seen people, Connor Coffin maybe at the box getting a score with dolphins. Don't know if it was in the excellent range or near excellent range. Hard to keep your composure in a moment like that.
Yeah, I think she almost lost it, to be absolutely honest. But she, you know, she reeled it in. But Gabby, remember a couple of years ago during COVID, Bronzy McCauley just went, like, to a whole new place. Her surfing just got so fucking good. It's like she went up the desert, basically spent 80% of each day in the barrel and just started laying down these big power turns, came back to competition. She got on a magic run through the event marks, made the semis. Everyone thought she was going to win. She was just so, her performance had been that elevated that she suddenly was a contender for an event win. Well, Gabby Bryan has been that surfer this year. Like, everyone's just been talking about her surfing. Richard Dog Marsh, who coaches her, he's been dropping clips of her free surfing that are just amazing. Her carve is like, that's her trademark turn, and it's like she's got a few different variations of it, and it's as good as anyone's. I think it's the best carve on the women's tour now, with Carissa and Steph not there. It's just it's that dependable, and it's so strong, and it actually, like, it's fresh. We haven't seen too much of it, so it's like it's just ready to take some events out, I think. But yeah, I could kind of see. I never felt like Gabby was going to be in trouble, even though she went into the event in 10th. Just at main break and the way she surfed there, I kind of felt like she'd at least keep her place on tour. But, yeah, didn't surprise me to see that she took the victory. I don't think it would have mattered who she was up against in that final either. If it was a world champ or one of the multiple event winners on the tour, I think Gabby would have been hard to beat.
Yeah, the eight one as well at the end for that big psycho foam ride. I've no idea how she pulled that thing down. Incredible manoeuvre. And, getting the nod over Sawyer Lindblad, ending her amazing run. I mean, Sawyer Lindblad, what a performance as well. Like, she just was so at ease in the situation that she was in. So much pressure, and yet it didn't show whatsoever. It was actually strange how calm she was and how much she was just enjoying the step-by-step process.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, Jake Patterson is such a great addition to a camp if someone is a little reserved, almost shy, has obviously is competitive but doesn't show any kind of real competitive desire, doesn't really kind of let people know how bad she wants it. You know, it's sort of like Jack Robinson just has it. He just naturally has it. So you don't have to get him up for the big heats, you know, whereas like John's telling people that he's got it, but in the moment you kind of question it. You go, oh, he's got it, but I mean, he's the best surfer and he didn't win. So has he got it? You know, like when it's all flowing, it's all good. But yeah, I think Sawyer's kind of the same, just a sweetheart. And then, you know, just gets the ultimate reptile in her corner. And yeah, he just got a psych, got her up for the battle. I think just positioning wise, he just had her well and truly tuned in to whatever Margaret's would serve up during that window. And but yeah, full props to Sawyer. I mean, she was just, you know, another one of that young generation who are just like just not one bit afraid to throw everything at just a heavy section. They're not afraid to eat shit. Like, that's the truth of it. Like, they just go at it. Like, she just was attacking those end sections. Like, nosediving on a couple of those end sections where, you know, she was able to keep her, stay on her feet. Like, nosediving at that point is like, you hit the reef. It's just like, you can't avoid it. You're coming down. There's that much water behind you. You get a bottom out. But, yeah, I loved her surfing.
Amazing performance, man. And, mate, amazing performance by yourself and Rick Love in the booth. Thoroughly enjoyed it. And, yeah, the TB edition for that John Heat was an amazing highlight in terms of the broadcast. Fuck, pretty funny. And, yeah, just some amazing awesome surfing going on.
He's the best. He's the best surfing, best pro surfer that you could ever share a lineup with, because all he does is just hoot and holler. He's stoked to see you get waves. He's not a wave pig. But to call a heat with someone with that kind of buzz and feel for just good surfing and also competition was just a joy. So, yeah, that was awesome fun.
Amazing, mate. Great work. And thanks so much for your time.
Smitty, anytime, mate. Love just being a big old, well, after WA, semi-overweight surfing with you, mate.
Sick, mate. Sick.